If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, episode 151, we are inciting Moon Ferguson's riot. Moon Ferguson is a woman you may not know quite yet, but she has a fascinating story. She was a single mom at a young age who worked like mad to follow her dreams, follow her passions, went to film school on a lark, and now has an award-winning show that she has created all herself from the ground up, paid for everything through an crazy amount of hustle called Juju the Web Series, which is now available on Amazon Prime. It started on YouTube, has made the big jump like some other cool shows like Hellier. We talked to the folks at Hellier earlier this year, to Amazon Prime, which seems to be the place where cool independent creators get their shit seen this year. So I am really excited, pleased, pumped to bring you guys this interview with Moon Ferguson. I did want to let you know that Patreon supporters heard this episode first. There are two levels. I deleted all the other levels. I just deleted them. It's a pandemic. I have so many things going on. I couldn't possibly try to come up with ways to send you guys things that were safe or able to be done in a timely fashion. So for now, there are two levels at Patreon, patreon.com/incitingprojects. For $1, $1, you can give as little as $1 a month, and you can get all of the full audio episodes of this show, the entire back catalog, for at least the last year and on into perpetuity. You get the full unedited audio interviews earlier than they're released. So you get to hear sometimes, 10, 15, 30 minutes of extra content. Just me and my guests just sort of sit there and chat and get to know each other and, shoot the stuff. So, and for $5 a month, you can get all of those video episodes. So, there's just some cool, funny stuff that you just don't ever get to see because this is an audio format. So if you give $5 a month, help keep the lights on around here, help keep things running, you get a little bit more. You get that video content. It's really fun to see the old video episodes of me and Velma doing our joint show Inciting a Brouhaha. That's always hilarious. That content's up there as well. So again, for as little as $1 to $5 a month, you can give whatever. It's just those are the reward tiers. But you can give me however much money you want. It's fine. I don't think Patreon stops you. So if you just really want to give me your money, I'll take it. again, everything is at patreon.com/incitingprojects. I did want to kind of say a big thank you because your donations really do actually translate into real help for the show. I broke my desk chair earlier this summer. Some of you guys that follow me on social media know I broke my desk chair, my cushy little roller desk chair earlier this summer, and the back broke off. I don't know about you. I don't know how often in a pandemic you are somewhere with office supplies and desk chairs, but I'm not there very often. But through your donations, I was able to get a replacement desk chair finally. So my butt is in a chair with a back on it, which is awesome. I'm so grateful. One last thing before we kick the show off. I do want to go ahead and put this out there. I am gathering up some stuff, some things, some creative content for the annual Samhain share. So if you are a musician, if you are a storyteller, if you're a poet, if you're a witchy person who thinks that you personally have a cool ritual or spell that you might share with the rest of the listenership that is appropriate for the time of Samhain, if you have content that you would like to share and be a part of this episode, email that to me, Firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. If you are a musician, this is a great way to get your music heard by other folks. If you're a storyteller, a novelist, a short story teller, a folk tale sharer, anything like that, this is a cool way to kind of get your name, your stuff out there. We've always had some really great shows in past years with folks sharing stories and songs and all that kind of thing. So you guys are always real cool about sharing. So I wanted to go ahead and put that out up front, but I'm not going to make you listen to me anymore. I'm not that interesting. I'm really not. Here is my interview with Moon Ferguson. Miss Moon Ferguson, thank you so much for being here today on the Inciting a Riot podcast. How are you doing this bright early morning?
I'm doing extremely well. Tired, but, you know, I woke up, so...
Moon, you are booked and busy lately. You are... I don't know how I didn't know your name before, but I discovered you and discovered your... you know, creative work out there just earlier this summer. And suddenly I feel like everybody online is talking about you and talking about your work. So you are the creator of Juju, right? Juju, mm-hmm. The web series. Tell me a little bit about Juju.
So Juju, the web series, is a fantasy series about three best friends who are the typical millennials going through everyday crap that we go through in this modern time. And on top of that, they find out they're witches. Mm-hmm. So they have a destiny to fulfill, lessons to learn within their witchiness and their humanity. It's just basically like Insecure and Charmed put in one, kind of, sort of.
And I love that. And what I love, though, is that, sure, it's really easy to say that the show is sort of like Charmed, or even just, you know, a real short elevator pitch of, oh, it's Charmed, but in 2020 and black. And it's really easy to, like, pigeonhole it into, oh, it's just a black Charmed. But it doesn't seem like it's a black Charmed. I mean, these women are dynamic. They have sex. They're queer. This is so much more than just I took Charmed and made it black. It seems to have such a richness of story to it. Where did you come up with these characters?
Oh, so these characters... these characters are three parts of me. So I split myself three ways. So if you put them all three together, you have Moon. and that was only because, first of all, I was like, all these personalities on TV, I really wanted them to be different type of black women that we haven't seen. And to show, like, friendship amongst eclectic women. Like, my best friends were, you know, a quartet. But our personalities are so different. So it's like, if you look at us, it's like, how the hell are they friends? So I wanted to show that also onto screen, because of my friends, I'm Gigi. You know, I loudly talk about sex, you know, my relationship with men, to men, you know, I believe, yeah, I'm very liberated. I'm very, like, you know, hell yeah, do what you want to do, girl. I'm here for it, you know? And I know Gigi is such a controversial character, but, like, so when I see people's comments about Gigi, I'm like, oh, you guys are, like, really talking about me right now. And, like, I love it.
I am a Gigi. I am fully a Gigi. I saw the first episode and I started tweeting. I was, y'all, I'm Gigi. I'm Gigi. I was like, I feel seen. I feel called out. I feel read. I feel... It's just, I love it. I mean, so you say that you, you know, feel some type of way whenever people start talking about Gigi, but like, has reaction been negative to Gigi? Because I feel like she's a character that people love.
Oh no, yeah, she's widely loved, but you know, you have those, it's a lot of like, well, why does she have to be this trope of a hoe or whatever? And for me, I'm like, well, it's not a trope. First of all, like her personality is like this and she man bash or whatever. So for me, it's not a trope. I don't man bash unless I have to. You know, there's a time and a place for it. And that's what she is. It's like that time at her best friend's party where she's trying to like talk some life into her best friend. And then you got this freaking dummy. You know, say this stupidness, and she know, you know, she's just being protective of her best friend, because that's how I am. You know, someone stepped to my best friend crazy, and against their morals and their values or whatever. I'm like, hello. First of all, you're not finna talk to my best friend like that. That's what I do in real life. Like, you can literally tweet them and ask them. They're like, yeah, she's quick to like jump. So I wanted to show that, but a lot of people with that personality, they were like, well, why does she have to be this? Why does she have to be that? And I'm like, but that's who I am, you know?
Do you find that there is a falling in line of genders who think one way or another about Gigi? Because I feel like that's some of the same conversation that we've been having in the last week around the Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion video of how dare these women... reclaim their sexuality. How dare these women talk like men have been talking in this same exact genre of music for the last 40 years? Like, how dare they?
Right. For men, the men don't really, I see dudes comment, but they don't really there's some who comment on her, but I don't think it's as much as the women. Just like last night, I was watching it with a friend, and he was like, I don't like Gigi. And I was like, dang, like, you know, I didn't tell him who it was based on. And I, you know, I don't hold it personally, but because I know as they watch this series, they're like, oh, okay, Gigi, I get it. You know, so, and that's just like how humans are. Like, mm-hmm. we judge. I intentionally wanted everyone to be judged based off like their first impression of these characters. And then just bit by bit peel off their layers so that they can have compassion for those characters.
Well, I don't just find Gigi fascinating. I find you fascinating. The work that you've done, the career that you're building is very much self-made. It is very much, I hate the phrase, like, pulled up by the bootstraps, but you are just out there fully bootstrapping the literal actual hell out of this career of yours. I mean, you are crowdfunding and, you know, working all sorts of jobs to make your movies, your shows, your whatever, and you are making this. I mean, you completely own your career. So I want to pull the camera back, so to speak, and talk about you a little bit. How did you get into filmmaking?
I've always wanted to tell stories. Like, I've always been a bookworm and things of that nature. Always loved TV. Grew up, you know, poverty. It's like teeter totter, you know, just trying to make $1.15, oldest of five kids. So it was like my mom had to, like, because she was in nursing school, and with all of us, she was turn on the TV, you know, just turn it on. And we shut up. Like, all of us used to just watch TV all day. Disney movies. We had a lot of Disney movies. So me and my five siblings were Disney kids, like, through and through. And then, like, you know, as I got older in my childhood, I needed an escape. Mm-hmm. So I had to, like, you know, I would just, you know, witnessing violence and things that kids not supposed to witness. So reading and, like, writing and, like, watching movies, that was my escape from it all. And then, you know, as you get older, it just kind of just died down. I'm a first generation American. Americans, like, expectation from your immigrant parents, and I came to this country for you to be this. So, like, it just got repressed and repressed, because as I got older, I was preparing for college. My mom already had my career picked out. I didn't have a say in it. Got pregnant in college freshman year, so that didn't make my case any better. So my brain just kind of switched to just operating on survival, because I'm a teen mom. You know, I got a old single mom at that, super single mom at that, in school and having to work and started bartending and strip clubs and all that stuff. It was a lot. So, like, filmmaking just kind of just poof. And then 2015, I was back in school because I was going to do this physician assistant program. I have a biology degree, so I was going to do assistant physician assistant program. Whoa, edit out that tongue twister. and then I needed, like, an elective. So, you know, I'm just scrolling through the course catalog or whatever, and then I saw, like, film stuff and, like, you know, film editing and screenwriting and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, I guess let me at least pick a fun class.
Sure.
As my elective or whatever. I love movies. I was like, oh, this might be cool to know and whatever. And I took screenwriting 101, and I went to that screenwriting class. And after that first class, I went to the advising office, and I said, I want to apply for the film program. And, you know, that was all she wrote. I stopped pursuing the physician assistant, just that, all those classes. Wasn't good in science anyway. And then I quit my job because it was like a full-time program. Mom wasn't happy with that because I was 26 and my son was in, like, kindergarten or first grade or second grade at the time. So, like, it's like she was basically like, girl, you're an adult and you have a whole child. Like, and you quit your job to go to film school. She was like, girl, like, please get your shit together. But at that time, I had my own apartment, so nice. I wasn't living with her. So I was like, well, you know, this time, I'm gonna listen to you, lady. And then that was all she wrote, and I'm here.
Well, and we're glad that you are, because, I mean, you are putting such amazing content out into the world. I want to talk a little bit about, because you, I mean, you have a lot of influences and a lot of loves, and you are, you know, very outspoken about being an advocate for women. I mean, anybody really, but women specifically, reclaiming their sexuality, reclaiming their sensuality, not being ashamed or afraid of hustling, doing whatever you have to do to create the career that you want. I really loved that you were posting photos recently on your social media about your bartending days. And I love that. I think that people need to talk more openly about the ways in which we navigate that work that, you know, that folks don't like to talk about, that isn't supposed to be mentioned. Oh, we're supposed to be ashamed of the fact that we bartended, or we're supposed to be ashamed of the fact that we, you know, did some types of work. What does it mean to you to talk more openly than other folks do about those kinds of things?
It means a lot, because once you understand what someone has to do to survive, then, you know, you open up a little bit more compassion to yourself. And I feel like that's what we all lack, is, like, compassion. We're so quick to judge and this, that, and the third. And, you know, it's not our fault. It's society and religion and culture and all that other stuff. But And, you know, especially for moms and like teen moms and for women, is like, life for us is so hard. Like, there's so much we have to balance. There's so much we have to juggle. There's this little person that you have to, like, this little person that is like stuck with you. You know, it's like you can't give them away. You can't, like, whatever. Like, this, you are responsible for the livelihood and well-being and making sure this person stays alive. Do you know how hard that is? So it's like that's like your main mission. And it's like, you know, yes, that whole trope of like, well, you should have known who you were laying with and blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole father thing, the father not being in the picture. Yes, I understand that. So it's like you make a choice. You take accountability for yourself. So when you take accountability for yourself, people, when on the outside looking in, they want you to, I don't know what they want single moms, teen moms and women to do. I don't know what they want them to do, but it's like, yes, take accountability for yourself, but this way, not okay. Say I made this choice. I made the decision. I'm here now. I have this child. I can't force the other person to be a parent, but I need to take care of this child. Okay. I'm going to go strip. That's me taking accountability for myself. I'm going to go find a quick job, quick money, save up real fast. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not stealing from anybody. But it's like, oh, you're a mom and you're this, that, and you're taking your clothes off for these married men. I'm like, well, it's not my fault that these married men came into the club.
Also, why aren't they the ones being? I mean, why is there never any criticism for them?
So it's like, I did webcam to take care of my child. I did strip to take care of my child. I did do bottle girl service. I did do bartending. I did wear thongs and fishnets and have my ass and titties out and flirted with a few guys to get a big tip. Yes, I did that. You know, I needed to survive.
You know, the funny thing is, you talk about that, and the reason I've been so very keen to talk to not just you, but really anybody who is sort of openly willing to talk about their history, not necessarily in sex work, but in the peripheral around sex work, you know, is because I think I was listening to a Dan Savage podcast a couple of years ago, and he's like, we all probably need to get used to the idea that we're gonna at some point in the near future elect a president who has taken a dick pic. Like, we just kind of have to, like, accept the fact that one day, real soon, we're going to have some presidents with some nudes out there, and we're all going to have to get over it.
Right, because look at our age, our age is about to be president. Like,
yeah. You know? I'm like, yeah, there's a little part of me that's like, you know, if I ever get a little too famous, I'm kind of scared of what might come out.
Right.
but that's the thing, is if you take the shame out of it and you just say, listen, I mean, what do you want me to do? I was 20. I had a phone. Like, exactly. But I appreciate that you do it, because the more people that talk about it, the less of a stigma there is around it, the less that people can point to it and take it from you, because you already have, I mean, you've owned the power there. You say, you know, this is how I'm putting this out in the world. Yes, I did this. Yes, I'm proud of it. Why? Because it put food in my stomach. It put food in my child's stomach. It gave me a roof. I mean, I went from somebody making a dollar out of 15 cents, and now I've got an apartment.
Right. Bartending got me my camera equipment, like, when I was in film school. And I was bartending while in film school in back home. Well, I'm back home in South Florida, but in Miami. And, you know, that's our culture, parties, strip clubs. Sure. So that was how I got my equipment. That's how I paid for some of my projects. I mean, I don't care.
Like, and you shouldn't.
Because it's like, when people try to shame you, it's just like, okay, what do you get out of it? Like, what do you want me to do? You want me to go back in time? I always ask that question when someone asks me a question like that. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Build a time machine and go back in time? Like, I can't do shit about it. It happened. Like, how does that change your view of me? How does that change my brain? How does that change the fact I can write a web series of this magnitude? Like, what does it change? You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's like, you just need to get over whatever people had to do to survive. Because at any moment, that could be you.
Oh, so easily. I mean, you know, we know statistically that people are, I think, two paychecks away from homelessness. The vast majority of Americans, they can't afford a $400 emergency. They're two paychecks away from possible homelessness. Most people don't have the kind of safety net. And the folks that look down their noses at people that interact with sex work or interact with tangential sex work or interact with just, you know, survival mode methods of getting money at all, those are the people that don't realize how close they are to being those people.
Right.
And I'm so glad that folks in our generation and younger are waking up to the fact that, like, listen, however you have to make a living is how you have to make a living, and there's no shame in it whatsoever, as long as you're owning the power, as long as everybody is you know, engaging consensually and exactly. Let's talk about, so I know that this is a hard left turn from from strip clubs, but let's talk about Disney. You said that you grew up watching a lot of Disney. You have a lot of influences, and I'm really curious because the influences that you talk about on your social media are a lot of the same influences that I have in my own work. You grew up watching Disney. You probably grew up watching a lot of the same Saturday morning cartoons that I did. Tell me a little bit about your experience, you know, watching some of those kids shows, and specifically what it was like to sort of look for yourself in those shows.
Well, back then, I think when I started to actually notice, like, Black people on television, it was a surge of Black TV. So it was kind of like I started getting conscious at the right time. Mm-hmm. So I had like shows like That's So Raven. Like that was such a, you know, that came out, I think I was in middle school going into high school.
Wait, is that show that old?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it has to be because she's our, oh no. Yeah. Oh.
Right? I'm like thinking back. I'm like, ooh, I am like, the kids
are going to be like,
these are dinosaurs. Yeah, because I'm like, I'm remembering it. I was like in eighth or ninth grade. But, you know, she was our age. And I was like, wow, it's so nice to see like someone who looks like me and like acts like me on TV. And then there was like Taina. I know that's Nickelodeon, but like Taina.
Sure.
One-on-one, you know, stuff like that. So back then, I guess, because like at the moment I started to get conscious, it felt normal and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. You don't really realize like what's being represented or not if you're not like super in tune and like all the time. So, yeah.
Do you, what's your favorite Disney movie? You have one? Yeah.
So my favorite Disney movie, just because my mom said that like when I was two, I was pissing her off. She talks about it all the time. She was like, ooh, this little girl, The Little Mermaid.
Nice. Of course.
I can say it, like I can see it in my brain beat by beat, score by score.
You even a little bit have the Ariel hair going on this morning. Just a little bit. It's in that red family. I love it.
So that, and then the Hunchback of Notre Dame. That's another fave.
Oh, Esmeralda is an underrated Disney gem. We need more of her.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of us are becoming a lot more socially conscious in recent years. Certainly Donald Trump's election has done a lot of very bad things, but if there's any one good thing that's come out of it, it's that a lot more kinds of people that normally wouldn't have been awake are waking up to social injustices and to implicit bias and the ways that our media and just society in general is not built for anybody other than cishet white men, rich cishet white men at that. And it's caused a lot of us to get very think piecey about our childhoods and about the media that we took in. I wonder, do you ever go back and look at some of the shows that you watched or the movies that you loved with a critical eye, because I know personally I struggle with going back and watching, you know, old movies that I loved and old TV shows that I loved and going, oh, there's too many gay jokes here. Did we?
Yeah.
This is, I don't know that I should have watched this.
All the time. Oh my God. All the time. Like me and the whole world, me and Black America, we've been watching Moesha.
What do you mean, wait, girl? Do you know that that is on my Netflix?
Like, the whole world, we've been watching Moesha. And me and my friend, we're just on the couch. You know, we're high. And I'm just like, you know, she wasn't a good person.
No, she was not. No.
And I'm just like, you know, there's too many fat jokes for me here. Niecy wasn't even all that fat. I'm like, where do you see the fat? I was like, she looked good.
Yes.
And I was like, she was making me cringe. But a lot of Disney movies also, like Hunchback of Notre Dame, for sure, because I was watching it with my niece and higher than a kite. And, and I'm just watching and I'm just like, oh my God, like this movie is literally about pussy power.
Yes. Oh man. And if you've never read the book, it's like, it is so much more tame in the Disney version, but the book is just, I mean, this priest cannot control himself.
I was like, I'm listening to Frollo and I'm like, so this is why he was
first in the town. He's just too horny and he's so upset because he's so horny.
I was like, that is, and then like the line, be mine or you shall burn. I was like, and I'm just watching it. I'm looking at my niece. She's 7. So she was like 6 or 5 at a time. And I'm like, you have no idea what's going on.
I do remember that movie created a lot of controversy. I remember, Regis and Kathy Lee. You remember Regis and Kathy Lee up in the morning? I remember when that movie came out, and I remember it must have been summer because I was watching some Reach. I was all about that daytime TV. I loved it. I was very addicted. But I remember watching Regis and Kathy Lee, and I remember Kathy Lee having an absolute fit about that movie. Just an absolute, do not take your children to see this. It is devil worship. They burn the city down. It's evil, horrible, terrible. Do not watch this movie. So, of course, I was like, Mom, we need to go watch this movie immediately.
I'm like, ooh, this sounds juicy.
I did that with the Da Vinci Code when I was in high school. They were like, the Da Vinci Code is evil. If you watch this, you will go to, or if you read this book, you will go to hell. So like, I immediately went out and bought that book. I read it like in a day. I was very much that kid that was like, if you tell me not to do it because it's bad, it's probably the thing I should be reading or watching.
That was me, and I know I like frustrated the hell out my mom with that, and it didn't make it no better because I was the oldest, so it's like can't tame my oldest, so my ship is just fucked up. So yeah, if my mom couldn't, like, I used to be like, you know, it's gonna have this been fine. Like, that's the type of kid I was. So you tell me not to do it, I'm like, what? Well, why not? I'm gonna see why you don't want me to.
So kind of talking about going back and watching some of that old media, you know, in the process of, gosh, the last several years now, we've had movements like the Me Too movement. We've had, we've had a lot of social unrest this year with Black Lives Matter. And as friend of the show, and actually the person that turned me on to Juju the web series, Lilith Dorsey, big fan of yours. She is a hoodoo voodoo priestess and does a lot. Yeah, she does a lot of great work. She calls the any riots or looting, she calls them economic redistribution events. And I love that phrase. I have been using it everywhere. But in the midst of a lot of the awakening of America, we have had to start parsing out what it means to go back and still appreciate someone's work whenever we also have to recognize that the creator of that work was a bad person, was terribly racist or horribly homophobic, or might have been, you know, a sexual predator or something like that. You know, there are all sorts of examples where you look at someone like Kevin Spacey with shows like whatever the hell his show was on Netflix. Yes, House of Cards. How did I forget that? But, you know, Louis C.K. and just so many, you know, big names that, you know, created work that people loved, that now when you go back and look at it, it's difficult to parse out whether to partake of the media, whether to not partake of the media. Can you separate art from artist? I wonder, as a creative yourself who has created work and put it out there, but also someone who is a millennial, who is socially and culturally aware, what are your thoughts on separating art from artist and, you know, partaking of media from bad people?
Woo! Oh my God. Okay.
I would like to remind you, my show is called Inciting a Riot. So.
Okay. Okay. Because, no.
We go in here.
For me, I don't want to say it's, it depends on the artist and it depends on what they did or whatever. But like, for me, I think everything through. Mm-hmm. Like, before I have a plan, like, I mean, I am beating it out in my brain all day. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, I'm always planning in my head. So when, even when I'm thinking of my responses, I'm like literally planning it out. Cause I'm like, girl, do we feel like pissing someone off today?
Oh, it's okay. This is the show to do it.
I know. So I'm like, it's always a process. So with separating art from the artist, so for me, I have this, like, it's, there's a degree of like what they did and this, that, and the third. So like, let's say R. Kelly, hell no. Mm. I couldn't even watch Surviving R. Kelly. Like, mm-hmm. because I've been sexually assaulted as a child, as an adult, as, you know, so it's like, I couldn't even get 10 minutes into it. I was like, oh, nope, I can't do it. I can't do it. So I'm like, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to watch it. I don't need to know all that. His music come on, I skip it because I just can't, I can't do it. But for someone like, let's say Chris Brown, I went a long time not listening to Chris Brown after what he did to Rihanna. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I had my own, as a child, I witnessed domestic violence in my own home. So it's like, you know, I was like, hell no, fucking da da da. But then, you know, as the years go by and Rihanna forgave him and all that stuff. And, you know, the thing with Karrueche, it was like after with Karrueche and all that other stuff. And like, I think like just like last year, like I heard a song on the radio by him and it wasn't like him singing. It was like the feature part. I can't mm-hmm. remember. Drake. I don't know who it was. So I was like, okay, this is a nice song. And then Chris Brown came on and I was like, oh, this is nice. And then, you know, I just started listening and I'm like, damn you, Chris Brown, like every song you dropped within these last 2 years, I'm like, I love. And then it's like, you know what? Rihanna's over it. Not over it. I don't want to say over it, but yeah, she forgave him. And, you know, she's found peace and he's doing what he's doing and not bothering Karrueche. And like, you know, mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, why not? But for like, but Chris Brown is probably the only person, really. But for like, when it comes to like racism and yes, you know, domestic violence and all that stuff, when it just comes to like, it's the dynamic of it all, and my soul is just like, oh no, like I can't support this. I don't associate myself with the art, and it's like my soul can't take it, but it's like I'm torn because like I don't want to support the artist, but there's also so many other people getting a check from my
yes.
stream.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, I like R. Kelly is 100% out, and I apologize to whoever the production team was. But it's like that, but that's what I juggle with. It's like, okay, it's not just the artist getting the residuals, it's also everyone underneath, you know?
Sure. And I, you know, gosh, there's so many instances of that. I know that J.K. Rowling has been really in it in the last year with her incredibly harmful and problematic statements about trans people and really queer people in general, because she decided to like loop in all lesbians for some reason. She's like, oh, I'm friends with a lesbian. It's like my mom when she's trying to tell me how she's not racist because, oh, I had this black friend that I worked with at the bank before you were born, and she's really good. We're really good friends. I was like, what's her name? You don't know her name. You don't know her name. But it's difficult because in instances where it's, you know, somebody like Rowling, I already own all those books. And it's right. You know, some people already own all that stuff. Yeah, you already know? Own the movies. The stuff already came out. Like, she already made her billion. So it's like, what do you do with it? Like, how do you interact with that now? I mean, I guess it's good that all of the actors and actresses in the films have come out and said, yeah, no, this is bad. But it's difficult. It's difficult for people who used a particular piece of culture to help them grow into the adults that they became, to help them learn lessons, to help them overcome trials in their own lives. And now they have to, struggle to right. to figure out what that means. You know, how do you interact with that culture from now on? I want to talk about Vampire Diaries.
Ooh, yes. I have a love-hate relationship with Vampire Diaries.
I'm only bringing it up because you seem to have very strong opinions about it on social media. And I was like, okay, I'm going to need to ask this woman about Vampire Diaries.
That's a show where it's like, I tried to separate, it's like separating the art from the artist, because I hate what they did to the only black character, but I love the fucking show so much.
See, now, Vampire Diaries is one of those shows that I did not finish. It's sort of like Supernatural, where I started it and I watched it, and then they beat heaven, they beat hell, they beat purgatory, they beat every monster on earth, and then it was still going, and I was like, what's left?
Right.
Like, what's left? And I checked out. So tell me about, educate me on Vampire Diaries. I want to learn.
So Vampire Diaries, so for me, I'm a type of person, if I start something, I have to finish it. Like, it doesn't matter how bad it is. Well, I'm
so
lying.
So bad, though.
I'm lying. Because Siempre Bruja,
I didn't even start that. I was like, that's a mess of a show. I saw the trailer and I was like, this is a mess.
15 minutes in, I text my homegirl. I was like, girl, yeah, I tried.
Yeah, I wanna fall in love with my slave owner or whatever. I can't
with
it.
It was just so, and like, timely inaccurate also, because like she came from like the 1600s to like, I guess, 2019, and she was navigating the streets like nobody's business.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so she's been here before. But I try not to like rag on shows like that, but because I know how it is. But that was just like, I was like, y'all tried it hard with that one. So what were we talking about?
Vampire Diaries.
So Vampire Diaries, for the first season, was super teeny boppery. So I was getting over the teeny bopper drama, but I am a sucker for high school romance. I don't know what it is. I love.
Wait, good- are you still the only person watching Riverdale?
Probably.
are you the one?
Giving them their stream. Like, I love, I don't know
and
what
Sabrina,
it is.
Did you watch?
I sure did watch Sabrina. Yes. I love my A books. I don't know what it is. I have no idea what it is. But I love a good high school romance.
Well, I think it's okay because they're all the actors are our age.
Right.
There's not a one of them that's a teenager.
Not one of them.
So I don't ever feel bad about the occasional thirst, because it's like, like,
right,
you're my age.
Right. So, and then the whole vampire thing, I was just like, okay, get over the crybaby white girl. Not Caroline, of course, but like Elena. So I had to get over that. I was like, oh, she's such a crybaby. But then I pushed through, and I was like, oh, here comes the drama. And then I just kind of just kept on watching. I couldn't stand Elena, but I kept on watching for Bonnie. I just wanted to see what they were going to do with her and, like, what more. You know, I was just learning, like, I was just learning her. So I was like, oh, my God, she does this, she does that. I wanted to see how far they went back. I wanted to see if they touched on voodoo and all that other stuff. Of course, they didn't. But I just kept on watching for Bonnie, to be totally honest. And then I started seeing more Black people, because then they introduced the ancestors. They introduced Mom. She introduced Dad or whatever. So I'm like, okay, Bonnie's world is a little bit building. She's getting boyfriends or whatever. Elena went to sleep for like 2 seasons. Thank God. Those were like the best seasons of life. So the seasons where Elena is like, it was the best season. Bonnie got a little bit more shine, got stronger. But they put her through so much. And like, I was like, everyone she's ever loved, they took that from her. They took away her grandmother, her father, her mother, her ancestors, her boyfriends, every single boyfriend. And they took away her best friend. They put, you know, even though I couldn't stand Elena, but they took that away from her too. So now she's left with Damon. You know, and that friendship, that was an interesting friendship. But then he's taken away from her because his main mission is Elena. So she don't really have Damon. And she end up with Enzo. And I'm like, oh, this is cute for her. I was like, okay, this is cute for you. And I'm like, okay, we're at the last season, the series finale. I'm like, this is the last season. I'm like, okay, Bonnie, she's going to end with a boo. At the third, they kill Enzo. And I was just like, who's left for her? Elena woke up, the finale. Elena woke up. Damon said, deuces. Elena is up. Bonnie had to stay alive in order for Elena Elena had to be asleep in order for Bonnie to stay alive. But they broke that curse, so they were able to coexist. Stefan and Caroline got married. They got they shit going on.
Okay, I need a Moon Ferguson podcast where you recap. I just need not even just vampire, just any teen supernatural show. Like, I just need Moon Ferguson's recaps, because that's been the most entertaining like 3 minutes of my life. I loved it. Yes. I loved every inch of that.
Everyone got their boo. And, you know, like, the last shots was Bonnie in a car, and she taking a road trip by herself. And I'm like, you motherfuckers. Like, my dog, she sacrificed everything for you freaking vampires.
Yep.
She sacrificed her magic, her family, her livelihood, her strength, like, for the messes that y'all created. People told her not to fuck with them vampires, but she did it anyway. And like, y'all just let her just a road trip. And I was just pissed off.
Yeah, Bonnie's one of those characters that when you look back on the show, that you're like, these writers just did not know what the writers didn't know what they had. They just didn't have perspective. It's sort of like Faith on Buffy. It's like, you did not know what you had. You could not have known what you had, because if you did, you'd have killed Buffy, and then the show would have been Faith. Like,
the material was there.
Yes.
The material was there, but I was so pissed off, and like, really, that's how Juju came.
Like, honestly, sometimes when I look at, you know, when I look back on Buffy, I'm like, if that show hadn't have been Buffy, if it had just been called Slayer, and you had done like a Doctor Who thing, and instead of it being about Buffy, so that Buffy always has to live, like, let a Slayer die every few years and get a new Slayer. Like, that show could still be running. Like, just give me a new Slayer. Like, every Slayer, like, you know, there's each generation a new Slayer is born. Just give us another Slayer. Like, give me more Slayers.
Right.
I'm here for Kendra. Kendra can come back. We can bring Kendra back.
Oh, I need to revisit Buffy.
I mean, but do we? Because I feel, I mean, like, Joss Whedon is a bad guy, and like, yes.
Oh, they're putting it back, so we'll see what they do with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scared about that. I'm scared about a lot of things. Like, they're bringing Avatar The Last Airbender back, and it's a mess. And, like, there's a lot of stuff that's coming back. It's a mess. I'm like, just leave it.
Yeah. Reboot culture has been pissing me off. But the only reboot that I truly, 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 truly enjoy is Fuller House. I think they did an awesome job.
I cannot believe you're bringing that up because I have a sick love for that show. I love it. It's the kind of show that I can leave in the background and just, like, have on.
I love it. They did such a great job. I'm like, that's a great reboot.
I even kind of like Candace Cameron Bure in it. I'm just like, I don't hate you. Like, this is good. Like,
yeah. Right. And, like, my guilty pleasure is DJ's wardrobe.
Oh, see, I haven't seen that. See, I didn't get all the way into Raven. He's in the Raven world, right? Was that her little brother?
DJ on Fuller House.
Oh, that's right.
That's my sick. I'd be like, ooh, let's see what DJ gonna wear today.
Yes. I love it.
That's me. I'm like, whoever did her wardrobe is off the chain. Because I'd be so excited every episode to see what she wears for the day. And I'm like, yes. Okay, shoes.
Cute little veterinarian. We love it. We love to see it. We love to see a successful doctor.
She is so cute. And I'm like, they did such a great freaking job with that reboot. And I think they did it so well because they did it as them, as in the now, instead of trying to go back and reinvent the wheel.
Another one that was really good was Girl Meets World, which was the Boy Meets World sort of reboot, but it was about his daughter. And that was great.
Yeah, I think that
it was smart. It was compassionate. The stories about girls in that mm-hmm. show were so smart and so aware and so socially conscious. And it did not get the love that it deserved. It deserved way more seasons.
Yeah, for sure.
So I want to before we wrap up, I want to talk about magic. I want to talk about Juju. I want to talk about all that kind of stuff because there is an undercurrent of the supernatural and the fantasy in your work, and I wonder is there part of that that comes from any sort of personal spiritual leanings? Where do you fall on the woo-woo scale of things?
Oh, I am full in. I have my crystals,
yes. You
know, I have my little sunflowers.
Those are my favorite flowers.
I'm like completely in. I have my money oil. I have my Oshun oil, my candles. I can't live without my candles, my bonsai tree, you know, crystals around my neck. I haven't taken this off in 2 years. You know, I'm fully, fully in. It's always been around me as a child through religion.
Mm-hmm.
About to incite another riot. From when I was a kid, I had already grasped the fact that religion and church and all that other stuff, like, that was magic. That felt like magic to me. Mm-hmm. When I watched, like, Teen Witch and, like, Charmed and all that other stuff, and then I see what we do at mass and all that other stuff, I'm like, oh, this is the same shit.
Yeah.
And I got that as a child. And I was the kid that my grandmother was just like, please, girl, just today, just shut up.
That was me.
Sunday school, I'm very curious. And my mom said I always used to just ask why. And I do that now. And it's not like, I always have to tell people, I'm like, when me asking why is not like trying to quiz you. Me asking why means like, yo, I'm like I'm genuinely interested and curious. And that's in Sunday school as a kid, I'm like, okay, but then why this? And then, but why that? And then how come in Charmed, they lit the candle and da-da-da-da-da and talked out the spell book and you just did that and we are in a church.
I did like, I mean, the first three seasons of Charmed, which are the only seasons of Charmed in my book, because Paige is terrible. I don't acknowledge Paige. Just sort of like how there's only three Halloween Town movies. There are not four. There's only three Halloween Town movies. Yeah. But I liked how in the original, the first season of Charmed, like, they kind of worry about going to church. Like, Piper's like, can I go to church? Like, can I still go into church? Like, she, like, jumped in there and, like, danced around.
Yeah, when she opened in the church and all that other stuff. Yeah. And, like, my grandmother was just, like, I know she was just so frustrated with me. But I'm, like, I had questions because it wasn't clicking to me. I'm, like, but is these witches are doing it on TV. You know, my grandmother putting salt on a windowsill telling God to let the spirits keep the ghosts and spirits out. Charm, they putting shit, you know, circle for the ghosts and spirits to keep out. And I'm, like, whoa, I'm like, are we witches?
So those are the kinds of things that you saw growing up. I mean, you saw your grandmother put salt on the windowsill.
Right. Like, I grew up in, I spent part of my childhood in America, part of my childhood in Jamaica. My grandmother is Catholic, so we went to mass and all that stuff. And then, but my grandmother lives in Jamaica. But when we're in Florida, back home in America, my mom's dad, my grandfather, was Seventh-day Adventist, where we went to church on Saturdays. Woof! That was strong. So that's on my mom's side. And then me, on my father's side, they're Chinese and Jamaican. So there was a time where I was going to a Buddhist temple. Mm. And this, all three at the same time, depending on which relative I was with that weekend. So religion, I know a lot about the different religions. And when I was in middle school, my stepfather put me on punishment and I had to read the Torah and the Quran. Because he was a Rastafarian. So I was like, my stepfather, I grew up with a Rastafarian. So like I was really well versed in these different, and that's what being a Jamaican is. Like your family is so many different things. You're not just Jamaican, you're Cuban, you're this, you're that. You're Chinese. So seeing that and then seeing magic on TV, I'm like, it's the same thing, y'all. I'm like, y'all don't understand that you're doing the same thing. And it's not to knock the church. I love the Bible. I love the Bible. And I love gospel music. I love the word from the Lord. I love it all. You know what I'm saying? But I also acknowledge that magic is real. Mm-hmm. And I believe those two things can exist. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to show in myself and in my stories or whatever. I'm not here to like beat it into someone's head and say, oh, you need to do this and you need to do that. Like, you know, Catholicism is a beautiful religion and I love it. You know, I love that I experienced it. Christianity is a beautiful religion. I love it. Judaism, like they're all beautiful and they're Muslim. You know, it's everything is so beautiful. It's so magical. And I'm not here to tell you to step away from it. I'm not here to be like, oh, black people, you know, we weren't Christians, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not here to do that. I'm just here to show that the people can be both. Mm-hmm. People can be both. I pray. I read the Bible. You know, I listen to gospel music and turn around and like do my, you know, sage my thing.
Do you put any kind of label on your own faith? Because I know that a lot of folks in our generation, a lot of millennials are, you know, what the Pew Research Forum calls spiritual nuns, people, N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N, but spiritual nuns, where they feel like they've left the faith of their childhood, but don't really have something that they would label as an adult. They're more spiritual seekers or just sort of spiritually open than anything. Or is there a label that you would ascribe?
I don't know. I really don't do well with labels, only because it's like, my thing is like, why can't I be all these things? Why mm-hmm. me being all these things make me someone fake? You mm-hmm. know, why me being from the South makes me a fake Jamaican? Or why me being Jamaican make me not American, mm-hmm. make me not from the South, make me not Black American. Like, I can be both those things. Like, if, you know, I love my Jamaican culture. I love, you know, the culture of my family, the Hispanic, the Cuban side, the Chinese. Like, I love it. And I have all those values I instill as a mother to my own child or whatever, and my friends and my work. But, you know, I grew up around Black people in America. Like, I went to an all-Black school. I grew up in the hood. Like, all I know is Black people. So why? I love Catfish. I love soul food. You know, I'm a Florida girl through and through. I love my whole town. I love candy-painted cars. I love bull teeth. Like, I can be both those things, you know? So I try not to label myself that way. And as far as like with spirituality, why can't I do spells and thank God at the same time? Like, you know, and it's been working out for me because because God has been loving on me. Everything I asked him for, despite me doing these spells, despite me writing about witches, despite me talking about his religion being the same thing as magic or whatever, despite all that, every time I ask him for something, I get it.
It's almost like people can't put God in a box or something crazy like that.
Right. Why does he have to love you more than he loves me? Sure. Like, what makes you so special? You know, it's just like being a parent. You have to love your children in the way they need to be loved. You know, your kids are not all going to be the same, but you're going to not take care of them because one not like the other. That doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I have no label. I'm just me. My son calls me a hippie, so what did he call me? He said, I don't know what he said. He said I was like a something hippie. But you know, kids, whatever.
I do. I have two nieces now, and boy, they will read you. They will read you real quick.
Oh my God, I'm not going to tell you how like my 7-year-old niece the other night called me and my siblings ghetto. I was like, oh.
So like my niece came into my house. Like we don't have, like we have a house and it's not it's not like a huge house, but like it's a 3-bedroom. Like I've got 10 acres. I've got like a 13 horse like stable in the back where we've got a horse that like, you know, it's not a bad. She walked into my house and she said, why is your house so small? I was like, well, your daddy's rich and I'm not. So
that's the damn truth, girl.
I don't know what to tell you, sis. But I felt real small right then.
Yeah, they do that to you. Isn't that crazy? Because when my niece said that, she was like, because I always wondered like how my son and like my niece and nephews, like how they view us, you know, because how I see my siblings, their parents, I see them as my little sisters. So I was like, what is like you guys' perspective of our siblingship? Because all my siblings are home. Like we're still together at home. And like, we're like, you know, like this. So I was like, what do you guys think of us? And my son was like, you guys are cool. But you know, the nice stuff. My niece was like loud, ghetto, extra. I was like, well, shit. I was like,
drag me, baby.
Then my mom was in the kitchen laughing. I'm like, you laughing like you not our mama. I was like, damn, that shit kind of stung, Sky.
I love it. How is a house full of kids? I mean, how are all of the kids in your family dealing with one, quarantine, and two, just everything that they're seeing in the news? I mean, you know, you can't avoid it. I mean, I remember being a kid. I knew that stuff was going on. How are they dealing with everything? How are you guys dealing with the conversations that are coming up?
I'm not at home. No, like
she said, my name is Bennett.
I'm not home. So like, well, we have the conversations about it, and they're, you know, they're kids. They're super young, so they're not as socially conscious yet. They are, but you know, like my youngest brother's 19. So I try not to like beat it into their head because I know they'll come into their own. But they have their own conversations around it, which is pretty like, you know, like, okay, you guys have sense and like you're going to be all right. But as far as the quarantine, I think I haven't heard it. I mean, you know, they had their, according to my mom, because she would call me and tell me. I'm like, okay, girl, what your kids do now? But I'm like, it's just regular bicker and banter. But like, we're so close because it's always been us against the world, that like, when we're apart too long. Even though I'm not at home. Like, I'm probably there. I can go there like every day and be like, oh, hey, niggas. Like, I just needed my little fix. So yeah, so that's how we are. My son is back home and he's just like, Mom, I'd rather be with, like, he's just like, he's, you know, when I had him, my youngest brother, my baby brother was 7. So it's like, that's like his brothers. It's not really like his uncles. It's like his older, it's his siblings. So he's just like, Mom, can I? Because I'm back home in Florida for the rest of the year until like next year. So he's like, Mom, you know, I can stay with Grandma. I don't have to come with you. And I'm like, okay.
How old did you say he is?
He's 12.
Okay. I did that around a little younger than him when I was whatever 6th grade is. I remember that summer I was like, I'm just going to go to West Virginia and stay with Granny for like 3 months, like the entire summer. Because I grew up in a really small town in East Texas. 585 people, 9 Baptist churches. It was, girl.
Oh, my God.
We could have some conversations.
That's tiny.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember that summer I was like, I'm going to go stay with Granny in West Virginia. And I went and I was just gone from my parents. That was still like the best summer ever.
I know myself probably feel that way too. Like, let girl go. Bye. But yeah, I love it because it allows me to be a filmmaker. So if I need to travel, if I need to be on set, you know, I'm very blessed to have my mom and like my siblings and my family dynamic because like, it's not just.
I was going to say, how is the independent filmmaking going with quarantine? I mean, you guys are having to be scrappy.
Right now, at first I was going to push my short film back at the top of the pandemic. Cause I was like, oh shit, like nobody's going to want to film this. It's shot. But then I was like, you know what? Let me just wait. It's a tiny film, you know, it's only 3 characters. It's in one location. So we're going to have a tiny crew and I'm just going to, you know, do it. Mask and all that, you know, sure. All that. So independent filmmaking has been, I was going to do a crowdfunding for it, but then I decided not to because the whole pandemic, I'm like, girl, don't be tacky.
People don't have any money. We're all broke right now.
I'm like, girl, don't be tacky. But I did do a GoFundMe personally because I left a 9-year relationship in May. And like the last 2 years that I was in New York, I've been working on Juju. I wasn't like, any money I had was just like for my son and like bills and stuff. So I left with nothing in my name. Mm-hmm. I had no savings. My bank account was on. So, and I was just like, I'm leaving this 9-year relationship with nothing, like just my carry on and my child. And like, this is not the first type of move for me and my son. So my son was just like, all right, well, back to grandma's house.
Kids are so resilient.
He was like, well, back to grandma's house. And I'm like, you know, I talked to him about it, whatever, but he's just like so grown. And I'm just like, cause I look at him and I'm super honest with my son. I'm like, look, this is my first rodeo. Okay. I am trying. I am new to this. You are my only one. And every day is like a new issue. It's like, trust me, I am trying. But he's just like, Mom, it's fine, Mom. And I'm like, okay. But he knows that, Mom, I'm out here just, you know, trying to do it for him. So yeah, I was like, you know what, let me strip down my pride and see how much I can get just to get a little putt-putt car. And then like, you know, blessings came. And and then the last 8 weeks it's been pretty life-changing. Like, so much has happened, like, tremendously. So,
well, Miss Moon Ferguson, I know that there are very, very, very big things in your future. I am so excited to be able to have interviewed you now. And, you know, in a couple years when you're winning your Emmys, when you're nominated for your Oscars, when this short film gets turned into a feature and Michael B. Jordan is like, I'm gonna play the daddy.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, he can play my daddy. I will fight you. I'm so excited to have kind of gotten in on the ground floor of Moon Ferguson and just kind of everything that you're putting out there and all the good that you're doing in the world. If folks want to find out more about you, your work, what you're working on, what's already out there, what's the best place for them to go?
My website, moonferguson.com.
That's good. And Juju is out now on Amazon Prime. And is it still on YouTube?
Only the first episode.
Okay. So the best place for folks to go watch is on Amazon Prime. I'm loving how, is the process a little less difficult to get onto Amazon Prime? Because like earlier this year, I talked to folks behind the docuseries Hellier, and they're finally getting on Amazon Prime. Like Amazon Prime seems to be the place for independent creators.
For me, with Amazon Prime, I did it through a streaming network that were distributed through, the Fantasy Network.
Oh, nice.
So they handled all that stuff. And they just said, hey, it's live, and there it is.
Is there a season two? Because I personally need it.
Yes. Season two is... I wanted to just kind of breathe from Juju and like break away from it, only because like last year while I was doing my crowdfunding campaign, my brother passed. And like in the middle of the crowdfunding campaign, was able to make the goal, but I kind of just like dived in into Juju, and like, I mean, I head first, and I was like obsessive with it. And I'm like, we have to get it out. We have to fix it. We have to do this. We have to do that. So I kind of just like, you know, it almost broke me. So like when I was thinking about doing the season, we did a See the Spark campaign for season two in January, but like my heart wasn't in it. And I was like kind of dreading making the goal. This is exclusive. I was dreading making the goal because I wasn't ready to like keep on doing it, because it kind of became a reminder of like what happened and what I didn't process. You know, the first episode is his music and, you know, all that stuff. So I was like, you know what? I'm not trying to hold on to this right now. I want to let go of this last episode on YouTube, and whoever is bothering me or bothering us about it, they can go, you know, use my language, the dick, and just wait, because I am tired. I got a child. I'm going through my own issues. I'm grieving. I lost my great grandmother to COVID. You know, I left a 9-year relationship.
You deserve some breathing room, girl.
I was just like, I can't do that right now. And I'm like, my son had to become my priority. Because there was a time where Juju came before my son. And I'm like, I gave this to y'all. Here you go. Now I have to go tend to my kid, you know? So consumers, give us some grace, please.
you get all the grace you want. And when you're ready to make some more Juju, I will be watching and cheering you on. But I will be watching and cheering you on no matter what you do, because everything that you do is filled with magic. And it is so special, the work that you're putting out in the world. So thank you so much for that, for your work, for your advocacy, for your voice, and for being here today on Inciting a Riot. I can't thank you enough for spending some time here. I'm hoping that everybody goes out and streams your show. But that's it for me. That's all I have for you. Oh, thank you so much. I had a very good time. I hope that you'll come back in the future, whether you have something to promote or whether you don't. If you just want to come chat, I will talk to you any day of the week. Well, rioters, that's going to do it for episode 151, Inciting a Juju Riot. I want to thank my guest, Moon Ferguson. It was such an honor and a privilege to get to talk to you. I fully anticipate seeing your name in lights for many, many years to come. Once again, if you guys would like to support the show, help to keep the lights on, keep the bills paid, upgrade equipment when it breaks, you can give as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/incitingprojects. If you'd like to email the show about this or any other topic, you can do so at firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. I'm also at incitingariot on most social media. There's Instagram and Twitter. I'm inciting a Riot podcast on Facebook, though I will say I am not blind to what is going on in the world. I am struggling to find a reason to stay on Facebook because it is just a cesspool of terrible things. If you connect with Inciting a Riot on Facebook, it would be super cool if you could leave a comment on a recent post or like something or share something or something, because I just... Twitter and Instagram and stuff seem to be the way to go lately. So if Facebook is your bread and butter and you just do not use any other social media and you're going to lose out on Inciting a Riot if I delete it, please let me know that. I would like to know exactly what the market share is of the Riot on Facebook. Anyways, I want to thank you guys so much for sticking with the show and continuing to support it financially and socially. This year has been a massive, massive year of change for me, and I know that it's been a big one for a lot of people, but because of you guys and your support of the show, there are some amazing things happening that I cannot wait to tell you about. If you'd like, another way to support the show is to leave a comment on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. That helps bump things up in the feed and helps new listeners to find it. So if you like the show and you want to support it and you don't want to give any money, telling other people is just the absolute best way to let not only me know that you like the show, but other people as well. I hope that you guys are safe. I hope that you guys are well. I hope that you're taking care of yourselves, your mental health, your personal needs. I wish you nothing but the best, but I'm going to leave you. And as always, I will leave you with love and light, firelight.